Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware, a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. It's Thanksgiving, so we're talking turkey with sweet potato casserole, stuffing, cranberry sauce, and pecan pie. But we're also discovering some surprising truths about this holiday.
As it turns out, roasted turkeys are actually nowhere near the original Thanksgiving tables. In fact, most of the foods we eat for Thanksgiving today weren't eaten in Plymouth.
And you know, a lot of the dishes came about, well, because of the products that were on the shelves and the marketing that told us this is the product we should use.
Every once in a while, though, the consumer creates the food trend. Care to top the turducken, anyone?
I've got to give credit to this fellow that said, this is the best pile of meat I've ever had, and then said, but if you added bacon.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Alrighty then, folks, this is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and boy, are we going to have some insights into the food industry today, people, because I have an amazing guest. Chef Andrew Hunter is going to be on the line in just a second, but before we go there, we're going to stop here for a second. I just want to remind my people, everybody who listens, either in real time or in the next 10 days, I guess. The tickets are now on sale for our Winter in the Garden Heritage Radio Network's holiday party and tasting. It is Monday, December 3rd in the Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. It starts at 6 p.m. for VIP and 7 p.m. for general admission. You can go to our website, heritageradionetwork.org. /gala. That will take you to the Eventbrite page, and you can purchase your tickets there. If I'm not mistaken, and don't hold me to this, but if I'm not mistaken, if you key in the name of my show, What Doesn't Kill You, all one word, you should get some sort of a discount. So join us. I'm going to go, and I'm making the trek. I'm making the Hajj from Rhode Island. And by the way, one of the things that we're auctioning off, there is a silent auction. There's fantastic tastings. Amazing chefs who have contributed their time and efforts to making beautiful food for this event. There's beer, wine, sake, and signature cocktails, including cocktails developed by the one and only Dave Arnold, along with Sother Teague and Damon Bolte from Speakeasy. There's just some incredible stuff going on there, but the silent auction includes my own small contribution, and this is by no means the best thing on the list, but it's still my thing on the list, and that is a weekend at my fabulous, and I do mean fabulous, house in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Of course, you'll be not allowed to come during July and August, but any other time of the year, you're welcome. It is well worth your while. There's a lot to do there, especially if you come during the warmer months. So without further ado, we're going to crank up our interview with the one and only chef, Andrew Hunter. Andrew has worked in various segments of the industry, food industry, including fine and casual dining, as well as research and development. He currently develops retail and consumer food products for companies including Wolfgang Puck Worldwide, Nyman Ranch, which is how we met, Martha Stewart, and Kikkoman. He develops menus and operating systems for numerous fast casual and casual dining restaurant groups, and he serves as both executive chef for Nyman Ranch and food service and industrial chef for Kikkoman. Welcome to the show, Andrew. I'm really excited that you were able to join me today.
Hi, thank you. Well, thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun.
It's a joy and a delight, Andrew. Just go ahead and say it. It's a joy and a delight. We know that.
if it's half as much fun as we had at dinner in Des Moines a couple of months ago, and it'll be well worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I guarantee as good a time, although the wine served is up to you in this case, unfortunately, as opposed to the excellent vintages and cocktails we were afforded at that gala dinner. I'm sorry you can't come to our winter gala, but sadly, Andrew lives in California, folks, where he is currently wearing a respirator. Well, I hope that's not actually true, but I know you have terrible air quality in your area. Are you okay today?
We are okay. It seems I live in Southern California. I think we're better off air quality wise than Northern California, but neither are good. Neither are good. But it is getting a little bit better down here.
I'm glad to hear that. Having driven from Rhode Island today to make this show, you know, I'm listening to National Public Radio the whole way. I know I should be listening to Heritage, but actually I'm kind of a news junkie, so I really need to listen to NPR because I have to find out what's going, just in case Trump has inadvertently blown up something. And so needless to say, the airwaves are absolutely filled with what's going on in California all day, every day. It's just, I cannot possibly express my sorrow for the tens of thousands of people who are now unhoused in Northern and Southern California. It's just, it's a heartbreaking story, and we are only at the very beginning of it. So anyway, Andrew, that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about exciting and fun innovations in the food industry, because you, as a person who develops for both restaurants and for brands, have your finger on the pulse of the food industry. So,
yeah, well, thank you.
You're welcome. And so when we were talking yesterday to kind of plan out this show, we were talking about the future of meat. And of course, you and I having met under the auspices of Nyman Ranch, which I'm happy to do an infomercial for, even though that's not normally how I play my show. The way people consume meat is obviously changing. So why don't you talk a little bit about sort of the blended burger that you've been working on, the sort of the plant-based, plant-forward type of innovations that are coming through the ground, sort of the ground meat sector?
Sure. And so one of the things that I think a lot of people of all different ages and demographics are thinking about is How do I reduce the amount of animal protein that I'm eating? Most people aren't trying to eliminate it from their diets. So they're thinking about what we call them, meat reducers. And I think that companies, premium purpose and mission-driven companies like Nyman Ranch and others, there are others in the same category, we appreciate that. We want you to be mindful about the meat that you eat and the quantities that you eat and how often you eat it, because it's how, I mean, we've set up our business in a way that is mindful, and so we appreciate consumers that are the same. We often think about how can I combine this meat with vegetables, different kinds of protein. So it's not that it's a garnish. We don't want you to use it as a garnish, but we kind of want you to think about meat the way a lot of the rest of the world does, and that's a component of the meal, an important component, but a component of the meal versus always being center of the plate. We also want you to think about how often per week you eat meat. You know, Nyman and companies like ours have products that we hope you eat often, and we have products that we know are a special occasion or an indulgence, and that might be because they cost more, or it might be because it's a ribeye and, you know, you really should only eat a ribeye on occasion. So we want you to think about what we have to offer, and not limit yourself, but again, make mindful choices. You mentioned blending. Blending is a really interesting way to think about eating ground meat. And the ground meat can be, usually it's beef or pork, but it can also be chicken, and to some extent it can be fish. And it involves blending into a ground, like a pound of ground meat. 25% or more should be roasted mushrooms. You can also put I heard earlier something about bacon. You could put ground bacon into the blend. You can put roasted onions. You can put all kinds of things. You should sort of think about seasoning from the inside out. So now this burger becomes kind of a taste explosion, and it's also better for you because it has cholesterol, less saturated fat, less sodium as a result of having some percentage of mushrooms in it.
Right.
And so it's an interesting way. And I think what's also fun about it is that fine dining chefs and restaurants have latched on to it, as have casual dining. And there's even a fast food brand that has a blended burger on the menu that I understand is doing quite well.
No kidding. What about in the retail sector? I'm wondering if there are, you know, you can buy pre-made patties, you know, whether it's from Schweid & Sons or Nyman Ranch or, you know, whatever. Does Nyman Ranch do pre-made patties, actually? I know they're pushing the beef, you know, right now. But in any case, are there blended burgers that are available on a retail level in stores as well? Do you see that happening, moving into that sector, or is it still on restaurant menus more than anything else?
There are blended burgers that are available for food service purchase. I'm not positive if there's a blended burger like in the freezer case.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
But what you're starting to see now in the refrigerated produce section, you're starting to see the mushrooms that have been roasted and ground.
Really?
And so you at home can blend them into your meat, and you can blend them in at, you know, I know consumers don't think in terms of percentages like I do, but you can blend in some percentage that you're comfortable with into whatever kind of ground meat you're using. But remember that the better the ground meat tastes by itself, and all of the different attributes, humane and sustainable attributes that it has by itself, will just be bolstered by adding delicious, you know, things like mushrooms.
Right.
So you got to start with something delicious to end up with something delicious.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that I don't think any of my listeners are the type of people that go to, you know, I don't know, Western Beef or one of those places and buy, you know, buy the 89 cent a pound ground or whatever. You know, I mean, it's can be kind of scary. In fact, it always makes me think of the terrible horse meat scandal in England a few years back. Did you follow that, Andrew? Where there was an incredible special at Tesco for ground beef patties, I believe they were. They love those preformed patties in the UK. And it turned out when they were just sort of randomly tested by a lab in Ireland, it turned out to be, you know, 90% horse meat. And there was just like a huge woohoo. Not that there's anything inherently wrong with horse meat, except for the fact that it's not inspected and it doesn't have, you know, there are no controls over the kinds of drugs that are given. These are just horses that are retired from the racetrack or whatever, and they get ground up in other countries, not ours. We don't have that. But we do import meat, and it can come into our supply chain as well. So hence the cautionary moment of saying, if something is too cheap to believe, don't buy it. Right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And most importantly, those consumers who bought the horse meat patties thought they were buying beef patties.
Yes.
So you really should be selling what you say. But I think you make a great point about if it's, you know, if it seems like a great deal, it may well be too good to be true.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's almost always true. You know, buy once, buy right is my motto. And so that sort of brings us back to the sort of growth curve of companies like Nyman Ranch that are seeing an expansion as consumers are becoming, you know, more hip to what goes on in the meat industry, and maybe not as excited about seeing meat at the center of the plate all the time. I'm trying to think of other companies. We talked about Snake River, I know. We talked about Creekstone Farms is another company that does really nice work and is selling at least into the restaurant sector, if not into retail. But those companies are seeing a big surge in popularity, I would say, way. Is that your impression also as somebody who develops products for other companies and brands and retail types?
It is. I think consumers are getting much more savvy about the different issues that they care about. And so, you know, I think that Nyman and other companies like who you mentioned, we spend a lot of time and energy doing things right, and or at least right by how we define it. And, you know, Nyman's very transparent. So you can go to our website or reach out to us and we'll tell you what we're doing. And then if that jives with what you think is right, then, you know, boom,
right.
It's a good match.
Yeah.
Right. But so we want people to be, selective and to use mindful again, we want you to be mindful and selective because we are. And so are a lot of our good competitors. And by the way, we like those competitors because
sure.
You can't be the only person or company in a market and expect to do well. But I think to your point about the growth curve, you know, Nyman, we keep up, but it's, every day we think about how are we going to keep up with demand. And so, but I think what that also creates is loyalty, especially in our chef community, because chefs know that the more loyal they are, the better their chances are of getting into the mix. And that speaks volumes about how dedicated our customers are,
uh-huh.
and how much they want to be a part of the Nyman or somebody else's premium meat program. I can't speak directly to the numbers of how Nyman is growing, mostly because I don't know them in detail. But I know that, you know, I look at factors like how many farmers are we adding.
Right.
You know, a farmer is a direct representation to, I'm sure there's a multiple. The average farmer is able to produce however much, you know, however many animals or pounds of meat. And the farmer network is growing, you know, at a rapid pace. And to me, that means that the company is growing
right.
at a rapid pace as well.
We're going to break right now for a quick sponsor drop, and we'll be right back with Chef Andrew Hunter, a recipe and brand developer who I met through Nyman Ranch, but who has a finger in many pies. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I was introduced to Le Creuset cast iron skillets many years ago in my first restaurant, Muggsy's Chow Chow in the East Village. Le Creuset has the superior heat retention of cast iron paired with unparalleled performance and the ease of enamel. That means delicious food with easy cleanup. And I love easy cleanup after running my own restaurants in New York for 23 years. Le Creuset original heirloom cookware is backed by a lifetime warranty. Their bold colors and timeless designs allow for an expression of personal style in the kitchen and beyond. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Well, let's talk for a second about, one of the interesting things that happened to Nyman, and this is now going back 2 or 3 years, I think, is that it was acquired by Perdue, as in the Perdue Chicken Company. And you have made an interesting observation about that yesterday when we were chatting, which was that they didn't just buy it to look good. You know, they bought it for other reasons. Can you talk a little bit more about what you think Perdue was after when they acquired a company like Nyman Ranch? Because it wasn't like it was a fire sale or anything. I mean, Nyman Ranch was doing fine. But Perdue has had an impact, and obviously they wanted something. What were the things do you think they wanted?
Well, and I think it's important to say this is Andrew observation
right.
versus what their actual business plan is with Nyman. But And if I look at other companies, other large companies that buy smaller, mindful, purpose-driven companies, they're looking, I think a lot of it is they're looking for education. They're looking at how can we turn this company that's doing all of these things that we like, and how can we translate what they're doing into our business? How can we treat our animals more humanely or differently? How can we, you know,
back the antibiotics out,
and market? Yeah, and whether that is antibiotics or whether it's the amount of space the animals get or how do they do their quality assessments and all of that sort of thing. I think they're also looking for a certain kind of passion and dedication that the company and its people have, because people, companies are people, really. How can they get an infusion of some of that same passion into their own bigger company? And I think some of it, I think we would be remiss not to say that some of it is credibility out there in the marketplace, but I also don't think that there's anything wrong with that either. Especially if they're using that credibility to help, you know, build a direction within their own bigger brand.
Right, right. Where they're expanding further into kind of Nyman Ranch style territory or White Oak Pastures or what, you know, what have you, whichever company is in your region that is doing animal agriculture the way you'd like to see it done across the board. Certainly, you know, having written a book about animal agriculture on an industrial scale, I can tell you that what we're doing now is not going to be something that we can continue to do in the coming decades. We will run out of arable land available to grow the kinds of crops needed to feed animals on that kind of industrial scale, as opposed to pastured management, which is, you know, what we hope the model will become more like. You know, I love it when I just go blobbity blobbity blob. Sorry, Andrew. But if more people, like, let's talk a little bit about, like, the consumer, like, what you've seen as a trend in how consumers approach buying meat. We were talking about blended burgers at the top of the show, but there's, you know, there's more, there's that sense of purpose-driven, and that is pushing, like, the big companies you work for. You work for Kikkoman, you've worked for Wolfgang Puck, you've worked for, you know, Martha Stewart. How is that translated into how they approach their brands and the kinds of products that they develop?
I've also worked for some of the big, you know, fast food brands.
Oh, yeah.
That might be considered by many of your listeners as part of the evil empire. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, they're right. But I also think that those brands, you know, there's still people at the heart of those brands trying to make, you know, smart decisions, and they're paying close attention to what consumers are doing, what they're thinking, and then what they're doing, and how that translates to their spending and so forth. And they're also looking at the success of brands like Nyman Ranch. And so I think, just as a consumer, a conscientious consumer myself, I think that we should support those brands when they are making decisions about going to antibiotic-free beef or antibiotic-free chicken or buying cage-free eggs or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That because ultimately, even if you think in pure economic terms, ultimately, if, you know, Big Burger Brand USA that has 5 or 10 or 15,000 units, if they're buying antibiotic-free pork, for example, guess what that does to our prices as consumers? It helps them. It helps the supply. It helps the prices go down. It helps the supply go up, and therefore the prices go down.
Right.
And just from sort of a pure environmental and animal, humane animal perspective, it makes sense. The more people are treating animals better, the better it is for all the animals. I know that sounds sort of overly simple, but it's
a little bit.
I think it's a
It
but
is
I think
true.
It's a truism. It's a truism, right?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because next week, and we did discuss this, I'm going to be interviewing Compassion in World Farming, who have been an NGO that has assisted Panera, one of those big brands that has committed to things like antibiotic-free meat and cage-free eggs and stuff like that. And then, so that'll be next week. And then the week after that, I'm interviewing this guy named Bob Langert, who was the corporate social responsibility officer for McDonald's for 15 years. And it, as you said, it's like these are companies that you think of as kind of being the drivers of, you know, the less than ideal model for industrial meat supply. And yet it was McDonald's that hired Temple Grandin the first time to, you know, to design her animal, her slaughterhouse facilities where the animals go through the serpentine and everything. They were the biggest early supporters of Temple Grandin and the idea of more humanely processed meat. So, you know, as you said, it's important to recognize that these corporate chains do have a huge impact on the supply overall. But talk a little bit about what it takes to change a supply chain. I mean, you're at that level where you see, you know, when a company decides that it wants to go with a product that is somewhat different, maybe somewhat better, maybe a little more pricey, how do they manage that supply chain change?
Well, sometimes it's frustratingly slow. It's a lot. Sometimes it's like turning around, you know, the Titanic.
Yeah.
But you're right. The Titanic, if it's going in this, if it continues on the same course, it's probably going to hit that iceberg, right? We actually know, we know from history that it did. And you just talked about whether our commercial supply chain is sustainable. And I agree with you that, that there's a lot of problems and challenges. So in some ways, they have no choice. It takes a long time. Some of that is their mindset. Some of it is just that they're used to things, projects taking a long time. Huh. You know, I've been known to stamp my feet in meeting rooms and saying, you guys are making this too hard. It doesn't have to be that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's and do audits and those sorts of things. But it doesn't have to be this hard. You shouldn't have to wait till 2025 to say now we're fully integrated with, you know, cage-free eggs or whatever it is. So, but there are a lot of steps to take. And, you know, there's also a lot of legal pressure as well to make sure that, you know, companies are doing what they're saying they're doing that we're, you know, that we're planning on buying from.
Uh-huh.
But so it takes a long time. And then the other thing is that when you have thousands of restaurants, just the production of the product and making sure that it can be produced in the volume with the consistency,
right,
and the availability that we need, because the absolute worst thing for a big brand to do is to roll out some new product that has all of these great characteristics that they're building into their brand and they're advertising for,
right,
and then all of a sudden the producer says, "Oh, well, gee, I'm sorry, but it's not available." So that's a big fear is availability and making sure that it is available, so that they can actually be selling what they say they are.
Well, remember, you know, when Chipotle ran out of pork? Remember that? And Niman Ranch was able to step in, but they ran out of pork producers that met their requirements. This was like 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know if you remember that. I mean, Chipotle's kind of irrelevant now, but at the time they were like, everybody was like, oh my God, they use cage-free eggs and grass-fed beef and blah, blah, blah. And they couldn't guarantee their supply chain. So you've just illustrated.
I think it was a supplier that didn't do what they said they were doing.
I think that's right, yeah.
So credit to Chipotle because they said, well, this is what we're telling our consumers or our guests, and if you're not doing that, then we can't. It was a painful decision, I'm sure.
Yeah.
If you're not doing that, then we can't use your product, and therefore now we're in a bind. But I disagree, Katie. I don't think Chipotle is irrelevant. Chipotle is certainly, you know, we're all watching the trials and tribulations, but they are a brand that, as illustrated by that last example, that really is trying to do things. I'm sure they're not perfect. I don't do anything with Chipotle, so I don't have any vested interest.
Sure.
But I'm sure they're struggling with all of these different food safety things. And on one hand, they're using a lot of fresh ingredients.
Oh yeah, and they make everything right in house in each one of the kitchens. Unless they've changed that. I think they're starting to change that. But initially, that's what was happening, right?
Well, they certainly are doing a lot of in-kitchen production themselves and so forth. Remarkably so for a QSR.
Yeah.
Or a quick-serve restaurant. So I think inherent is in that is some challenges with food safety. They actually get a lot more press, and it's a lot more detrimental because they have thousands of restaurants. But no, I think that I can't tell you how often clients or potential clients come to me and they say, we want to do Chinese food, but with the Chipotle model. I mean, for the industry, they've figured out a lot of smart processes. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people want to imitate them. Isn't there a saying like imitation is
the sincerest form of flattery? Yeah.
And I
misspoke when I was saying that they're irrelevant. I just think they're sort of like they don't command the same interest as they did when they opened, only because what they're doing is not as brand new as it was when they first started, right? I mean, you know, it's a lot more mainstream to be buying from companies like Niman Ranch if you're a QSR than it was 10, 15 years ago. I guess that was my point, right?
They've really become part of the fabric. They're not the disruptor, I think, in quite the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess you go from disruptor to pioneer. Remember that.
But we're gonna wrap it up pretty soon. But just to touch on that last thing that you spoke about, which was being able to tell, you know, you're marketing something to a client base. You're saying, oh yes, I'm buying, you know, exclusively blah 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 from XYZ excellent company, gold standard, yada yada. How much do you think because we were talking a little bit about greenwashing, because greenwashing has become quite a problem in restaurants. I don't know if it's in quick service restaurants, but certainly in some of the more high end dining restaurants, you know, that say, oh, I'm selling an heirloom tomato that was picked in the next county over. And it turned out to be from Chile, because of course, tomatoes only grow, you know, certain months out of the year. But I mean, how often do you feel like that is an issue in the world that you inhabit?
A lot.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Interesting.
I honestly think buyer beware. If it's a great deal, it might be too good to be true. If a restaurant is talking about all of the different ways or all of the different farms, et cetera, that they purchase from, it's not that it's never true. And it's like none of it is true, even on a bad day. I think you really have to take those kinds of promises with a grain of salt. Listen, no chef is going to say, my motto is to use the worst ingredients from as far away as I can get them.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Nobody's going to say that. So then they make promises, and you got to keep up with the Joneses. And so now they keep promises that they can't keep. Very quickly, I know we're running out of time, but there's a fast food concept. It's a breakfast concept in North Carolina that I work for, and they have a lot of really great brand pillars. They buy from family-owned businesses whenever they can. But here's the one that I wanted to talk about. They talk about the region that they buy from, and they were really smart because they didn't define it by 200 miles. They didn't define it by 250 or what have you. They talk about buying from family-owned businesses in the Southeast. Right. So as a quick example, we were putting a fried catfish sandwich on the menu. They could have bought catfish from North Carolina, but they found a better company that met their standards, et cetera, much more robustly from Mississippi. Mm. So I don't know how many miles it is from Greensboro, North Carolina to Mississippi, but it's more than 200. But it was a better, it was smarter. So I think what smart companies, and Thomas Keller has said this also, smart chefs, brands, big companies are buying from vendors that are doing a good job within their own communities. And so local doesn't have to be local to me. Local has to be that I'm doing something of relevance in my own locale, and then now I can ship lobster from Maine to Napa, but it's the best lobster that I can possibly buy, and they treat their employees well, et cetera. So I think instead of like a mile distance, we should think about what is the quality of that company and what are they doing in their own community. And I think just to quickly bring it back to Nyman Ranch, Nyman Ranch does amazing work within, you know, a big swath of the Midwest.
Yes, but it does, yeah.
But they're family farms that are stitched together, if you will, to create enough volume to supply the demand. So it's very difficult for someone who wants to buy Nyman or a company like Nyman and say, I'm getting it from 200 miles away. Instead, they can say, I'm buying from this, essentially a cooperative of family farms, and that makes much more sense to me.
I agree. I always had a problem with the local religion, you know, like, because if the best, I mean, I remember Patrick Martin saying this years and years ago, the guy who founded Heritage Foods USA and, you know, Heritage Radio Network. He said, look, if the best apricots are from Yemen, then that's where I want my apricots from. I don't want them from next door if they're going to be crummy. You know, it's like, and Bill Nyman himself said, you know, I think it was Bill said, you know, the Midwest is where cattle grows, you know, like that's the best place for cattle. So you shouldn't be forcing, you know, cattle husbandry onto areas in the Northeast where it's just not suitable. You know what I mean? It's like you try to go where it's going to be the best.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's the only smart way. And so just pay attention to your listeners, pay attention to when you're going to restaurants and, you know, think about how much prime beef is actually available. And if all of these big brands are saying they're serving prime ribeye, they're probably not. And I say to the restaurants, there's nothing wrong with a beautiful choice steak.
Right.
Just be honest. And I think that most people are still going to come to your restaurant if you tell them really what you're buying.
Yeah. And also, I love what you said about, is it good for the community that it's in? I think that's that should be like tattooed on every chef's forearm. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today. As usual, I forgot to break for a sponsor drop, but we'll find a place to stick that in. And thank you very much for joining me today. This is the first of what turns out to be like 3 or 4 programs about supply chain. Who knew? I thought I was doing stuff about water, but you know, I got sidetracked. Anyway, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you very soon. Have a happy holiday, my dear.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Have you heard? It's party time. Monday, December 3rd is Winter in the Garden, Heritage Radio Network's second annual year-end gala at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Join HRN's staff, hosts, members, and some very talented chefs and bartenders for a delicious evening that will kick off the holiday season and support our end-of-year fundraising drive. The evening will begin with a VIP hour, complete with bubbles and oysters. Then, all of our guests will work their way around 2 spacious rooms filled with food stations and bars, sampling fare from some of our favorite chefs. Sip on your choice of cocktails, beer, wine, sake, and cider while bidding on exclusive silent auction items. 2019 is our 10th anniversary, So whether you've been a member since Roberta's first opened, or if you just discovered your new favorite food podcast, please consider supporting us with a ticket purchase so we can start the year on solid ground. We'd love to see you at the Garden. So join us on December 3rd. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.